Hi, everyone. This is Danny Hooper, your host for Events with Benefits, a podcast designed to help nonprofit organizations achieve greater results and more success at their events, at their special events. Now, joined here in Southern California at the head offices of Winspire by the Director of Marketing, Ian Loth, and also Renee from Donation Match. We'll start off by saying hi, Ian.
How are you doing, Danny? Thanks for coming down yet again for another episode here. Today, we're going to be speaking with Jim Nye, a outstanding professional benefit auctioneer specialist, definitely one of the best in the country, who is locally here in California, but he just goes above and beyond to really help nonprofits with their events and providing resources and materials and education for really helping these nonprofits improve their events. And what you'll find is in this episode is it's absolutely jam-packed. He's a fast talker and he does not skip a beat. So listen up and get ready because there's a lot of gold nuggets coming your way.
Thanks, Ian. I really enjoyed listening to Jim tell us about the difference between a professional benefit auctioneer like himself and what he's seen happen with volunteer auctioneers, which, you know, he has a lot of tips. He actually has a great list of items that are commonly forgotten, and I can't wait for you to listen to this.
And at the end of this episode, as always, there's going to be some tremendous takeaways. So let's get started right now with Jim Nye. Around here, we call him Jim Nye the Auction Guy, but he's a good one. Let's go. Well, we're very happy to be joined today by Jim Nye, one of the top fundraising auctioneers in all of North America. Jim, you've been at this business a long, long time, and maybe you can just tell us a little bit about your background and how you transitioned into the fundraising auction world.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for having me, Danny. Thanks for that long, long, long time introduction. I'm not 50 years old yet, but I'm getting there. So I was a insurance agent for 10 years and kept hearing every single day almost people would say, you've missed your calling. I guess they would laugh, then they'd buy insurance and they'd say, you missed your calling. And I never knew what my calling was because apparently I had missed it, which is not a good thing to hear from people over and over again. And fortunately, one day someone asked me to be the volunteer at a benefit auction to help them raise money for this cause. And I didn't go to an event. Excuse me, I didn't go to a committee meeting. I knew very little about them. All I wanted to do was be funny on stage, which unfortunately is what a lot of volunteer auctioneers tend to do. And I was horrible. And unfortunately, I have the video from that night, which my wife makes me watch every once in a while to remind me I was back then. So it was completely by chance. I'm so lucky it happened. And now it is 10 years later, and I've learned an infinite amount about how much a fundraising auctioneer really needs to know about each client.
Let's just talk very quickly about your business and what it looks like today.
Well, I've stopped counting, or at least giving the count out, but these days I just say we do north of 50 benefit auctions a year. Most of it's in Southern California because that's where we're based, but we do work around the country. It is a full-time, as my wife and kids will tell you sometimes, 24/7 life for me. It's all fundraising auctions. It's all I know. It's all I do. I absolutely love it. And each event is scary. Each event is thrilling. And I think that myself and the other benefit auctioneers that I team with, one of the most important things is that we do feel that each event is still, it's complete unknown. And you have to go in there being 100% focused, 100% into it, and be ready for anything that could possibly happen. And with that fear in our brains that we aren't perfect and anything could still happen, I think that's what helps us to achieve beyond the revenue goals of most of our clients.
Well, Jim, I've always referred to myself with my clients as being the quarterback at an event. I know you see yourself the same way. And the reality is once that ball is snapped, that play can go 100 different directions. Let's talk very quickly about some of the differences between a regular auctioneer and somebody who specializes in the fundraising auction space.
Well, I'll give you what I call my top 10 reasons, top 10 items your volunteer auctioneer won't bring to your event. And some of these are going to seem so small, but they can each cost you thousands of dollars in lost revenue. So in no particular order, number one, a video camera. If you have a volunteer, and by the way, none of these did I bring to the first year of events that I volunteered at as an auctioneer. But these days, we always bring a video camera. $200 at Costco, right? Any video camera, set it up in the back. It doesn't need to be professional. We just hit record, and that way if anything goes on throughout that live auction or your fund-a-need paddle raise that you don't understand, you don't know who bid, you don't know who won, or there's a discrepancy, you can always go back. We recently had a call from one of our clients months after the event who said one of our $100,000 donors in our paddle raise has backed out, and they're saying it never happened. Do you have the video of that event? And this is a very large event, as you can imagine, with $100,000 donors, and they didn't have a video. We did. It was bad. It was a poor video. It wasn't just one angle, but we saw the person raise their bid card, and they were able to utilize it. So always bring a video camera if you're a fundraising auctioneer. And I'll continue until you tell me to stop, Danny. Number two, an audio recording of the event. This might seem like a duplicate, but your iPhone or other phone has a little application called Voice Memo. Just hit record, put it near a speaker. It's a very fast way to determine if bidder 204 won the puppy or bidder 240 won the puppy, because your recorders might have a discrepancy. So we always bring an audio recording device of some kind. That's number two. Number three, a music stand. As simple as that seems, sometimes the podium that you're given as an auctioneer is not sufficient. It's not in the right place. You're miles away from the audience. You can't engage. We always bring a music stand with us.
How many times have you and I both worked with podiums that your binder or your papers are sliding off the top, or they've got dual microphones on the podium, and there's not enough space in between the mics to open up your binder and lay it flat on the podium? Oh, there are some horribly designed podiums out there. Somebody could make a fortune designing a be-all, end-all podium. Maybe you and I should do that sometime, buddy.
I agree. Not since my last event of the year did it happen. And I've had events where Robert Downey Jr. could use the podium just fine, but I couldn't fundraise from it. So I agree with you 100%. Actually, at a recent event with Robert Downey Jr., not to name drop, but that was my last event, so it's on my mind. I got there, and the stage was so high, I literally could not get off the stage to go into the crowd and interact with the crowd. I was stuck on the stage the whole night, and it reminded me I need to bring some little tiny stairs or a step stool to each event I do. So now I have a step stool in my trunk. I could not get off that stage. It would have broken my leg, and the way the venue was, I couldn't get around. I couldn't walk around. It would have taken me 90 seconds to get backstage. So I think we lost a lot of money that night because I wasn't able to get into the crowd and interact. So I always bring a step stool. I know a volunteer auctioneer won't be bringing one of those. And then five is our simple little rabbit ear lights. Any type of little lights that can attach to the podium or to your music stand. I can't tell you how many times the lighting has been bad enough or just simply goes out. We've had the lights go out before, believe it or not. And you're stuck. If you can't read the descriptions, if you can't read your notes, we're going to lose thousands of dollars. $4 off of Amazon gets you a little rabbit ear lights.
All right. What else is on that list of things that fundraising auctioneers will bring to your event that a regular auctioneer might not consider?
Believe it or not, simple backup notes. I bring backup timelines, backup scripts, everything that I'm given from a client, I bring it in paper form. You would be amazed at how many times I've been asked by the MC or by the event planner themselves, do you have a copy of the timeline? Do you have a copy of the script? And every once in a while, that wonderful binder that we bring as an auctioneer can somehow disappear somewhere during the craziness of the silent auction, perhaps, and we're stuck without our notes. Those notes can be worth $10,000, $20,000 easily to an event. I always have a backup right under the stage, ready for me to go. I know exactly where it is. My next thing is a thick Sharpie. We get to some events, and of course, they're writing the bid numbers on the back of the program in the smallest Sharpie ever seen on the face of the earth. Guess who can't read that during a crazy live auction and paddle race? Your auctioneer. I always bring thick Sharpies with me, very thick Sharpies, and hand them out to the registration team if they're writing the numbers on the back of the program. Moving quickly along, a flash drive with everything about the event, every video, every PowerPoint for the live auction, musical things, anything they have for the whole event over the 12 months I've been working with them through emails and through committee meetings, I will bring that flash drive to the event. And again, can't tell you how many times I've had somebody go, do you happen to have the live auction PowerPoint? Ours isn't working. Do you happen to have the paddle raise or fund to need video intro? We can't get ours to play. Yes, I do. And I move on. And we raise lots of money. Last two things, an MP3 or CD with music for the fund to need. Sometimes we have that fund to need paddle raise moment where just feeling a little bit dead in the room. Maybe you're asked to ask for $25,000 to start off your paddle raise and you don't have a lead gift. The crickets can chirp very loudly in those moments. I like to give our AV professional, who we've all hired, right? Right, Danny? We've all hired an AV professional.
We try and insist upon it. Not everybody has bought into that program yet, but you're right. You should always have an AV professional in the room and a rented sound system.
Only if you want to raise money.
Yeah, true.
I will hand that person and a little MP3, a flash drive or something, with some little background music for our paddle raise or Fun to Need, Chariots of Fire, the Olympic theme, maybe the Rocky theme, something with just a little bit of inspiration. They play it lowly in the background just to keep things moving during the paddle raise. Not for every event, but it can certainly help depending on the situation. And number 10, I'm not going to have to convince Danny of this, I don't think, a professional benefit auction ring man will save your events and save your revenue so many times I can't begin to explain it. I would take 3 hours to explain to you why a ringman, a professional ringman at a benefit auction, will raise thousands and thousands of dollars. And okay, I guess it's a whole other seminar we could go through.
Yeah, Jim, explain to some of our listeners may not be familiar with the term ringman. So define that for us.
Sure. This is someone who could also be termed a floor auctioneer or an auctioneer assistant. They're on the floor in the crowd assisting the crowd to feel great about giving by recognizing their bids faster when they bid, by engaging them. When the auctioneer seems so far away up on that big podium and those lights and the huge dance floor you've set up so they can have fun later on, it separates you from the auctioneer. Everybody's so far away, you've got those ridiculously beautifully high centerpieces that are keeping everyone from seeing the auctioneer and from the auctioneer to see them. And by the way, when you have those big centerpieces, it also keeps people at table 32 from seeing people at table 7 for bidding. They can't see each other bidding, and the contagiousness loses it. An auctioneer ringman steps in, bridges the gap between all of that. They are out in the crowd. They know what's going to happen at a benefit auction before you or I know what's going to happen. They've done it so many times, and they're helping speed along the bids to the auctioneer. They're keeping the crowd engaged. I would say this. My simple sentence is a benefit auction ringman is like the nurse to the heart surgeon.
Right.
You can try and get a nurse to volunteer. You're probably not going to have the best success.
Right. Another point worth considering, you know, and I know, being professional fundraising auctioneers, that every auctioneer eventually comes down to two bidders. You may start off with four or five people with their paddles in the air, but by the end of it, there's just two people going toe-to-toe. Great idea to put that professional ringman or bid spotter on one of those individuals. You, as the lead auctioneer, can work the other individual. And lots of times that ringman down there kneeling at the side or standing beside that second bidder can really cajole a lot of extra money out of that bidder. Isn't that right?
I absolutely would. Everyone that is listening to this now is probably thinking, well, we have volunteers. We have volunteers that have done this a couple of years. We love them. We really do. But I can't tell you how many times, I think it's over 500 benefit auctions now for me, I've never met a volunteer that can do the same thing as an experienced benefit auction ringman. At one event recently, actually, I had sold a glass of water to start off an event. It's not an uncommon trick for us crazy fundraising auctioneers to sell something relatively worthless to start off the event to show people that we're here to give, not to get. I sold a glass of water for, I think, $300-$500, something like that. We're about 9 items into the live auction. We get to the puppy, and I get the puppy up between two people. They're way in the back of the room. One's at 55 and one's at 6, and they're at 6,500. And way in the back, my secondary bidder, now I'm trying to get them to go to $7,000. My ringman is back with them, and they're waving at me to hold on, hold on. They're having a brief conversation. I would never have gotten this result from a volunteer. The ringman knows exactly what to do. They've got them talking. They're telling me to hold on. Eventually, they run up to the stage, and they say, Jim, that person, that wonderful bidder back there, would like to let her have the puppy for $6,500. But they would like to buy a glass of tap water for $6,500 as well. Never would have happened with the volunteer. We raised $6,500 for the puppy, $6,500 for a glass of tap water, and I gave my ringman a big hug later.
Wow. Wow, great story. You and I know we've talked about this many times at the annual conventions for the benefit auctioneer specialists. We've talked many times that There's an awful lot of, there's always more money in the room than what event planners or the auction chair expects. And we've talked about the difference in mindsets between the regular auctioneers and the fundraising auctioneers. We as fundraising auctioneers are less concerned with how much we can sell a particular item for as how much money is in the room. That's where our mindset or focus tends to be. So what are some of the Jim Nye tricks and strategies and techniques that you used to capture some of that extra money?
Well, I'm sure we've all heard the term, and if you've been listening to Winspire for a while, which is a fantastic company which sends out so much great information, I think we refer to them as revenue enhancers. And the thing that blows me away, and when we do a revenue enhancer at the end of the night, a way where the crowd can give something, whether it's a dollar, whether it's $100, when we do it after the silent auction, the live auction, and your paddle race fund the need, if all of that is over, and then we try one more thing, it is amazing to me how much money is still in the room, how much generosity is still in the room. Something as simple as doing a first in valet, where you've done everything. You think you're done. You've said the $100 level, the fund the need, and bidder 165, you're our last giver, you raised $30,000, you're wonderful, you should be saying good night. But instead, you can do something like say, hey, by the way, we have about 300 people here, there's 600 other people in the hotel. Who would like to be the first person out of valet tonight? Your car will be waiting for you outside. You would think that would not gather anything. We've sold that thing for up to $10,000 at the end of the night when we thought everything was done. I would urge you to take a look at your event and give your auctioneer, your professional fundraising auctioneer, one more chance at the end of the night to do something wild and crazy. Just try it. There's something out there now, which if you want to get a hold of me later, I'll tell you about it. A wonderful auctioneer by the name of Chad Carvey, I think, is the one that put it forth first, but called Last Card Up. And it's a nice way of doing something at the end of the night to give everyone a chance to give. We've been raising thousands of dollars with this revenue enhancer at the end of our events after we thought everything was done. Danny, you're so right. There's always generosity left. It just takes someone with the right skill set to get it out of the audience before they leave.
Jim, you and I were recently at the Benefit Auctioneer Summit in San Diego, and one of my favorite workshops, or whatever you call it, one of my favorite, I'm not even speaking good English. Jim, you and I were recently in San Diego for the Benefit Auctioneer Summit. One of the coolest things that I most enjoyed was when we took an hour. And if you remember, all the auctioneers had a chance to stand up, and or 60 auctioneers had a chance to stand up in that hour, and they each had 1 minute to share their best idea. And I could not believe how many new ideas come forth every year from the Benefit Auctioneer community, because we're out there on the front lines really, really focused on all of this. I want to ask you, when you're contacted by a potential or prospective client, a non-profit organization, I know all the time we're dealing with the challenge, you know, they say we're charities, we don't have a budget to hire an auctioneer, we don't want to pay anybody for anything. How do you handle this?
Oh boy, I'm afraid that is event dependent. Everyone has so many different ways of going about their budgets. I think the most general answer I can give you, and I'm probably not going to make a fan out of some other fundraising auctioneers out there, but I am fortunate enough to have been doing this long enough. We have too much business coming in. Again, my wife and kids will confirm this. So I'm only interested in working with groups for multiple years. I want you to run up and hug our auctioneer at the end of the night and say, that was what we wanted. Please come back next year. That's what we want now. And I guess my question, Danny, is again, what exactly are you looking for? What is your question, Danny?
Well, so my question was, how do you deal with the issue, these organizations that call to book us or to inquire about booking us, they say, we don't have a budget to pay an auctioneer, we're a charity, we don't want to pay for anything. How do you handle that?
All right. Well, and I just wanted to clarify, because I was about to go in a different direction, but I'm glad I asked that. What we have to do is be worth more than our fee at the end of the day. And if we can prove that we're worth more than our fee, more than that volunteer auctioneer would have been worth, then I think we're going to be okay, because we're going to give the guests a better experience as far as timing, momentum, entertainment. Just, we've done so many events, we can help you as a committee have a better event, have a better guest experience. And if the guests have fun and they feel great about giving more than they think they should, they will come back next year. They will bring other people. So if you have a zero budget and you allow that fundraising, excuse me, that volunteer auctioneer to step on stage for you, the guest experience is going to suffer. Your event is going to suffer long term. So what I do, and I'll say it again, some people may not be thrilled with me for doing it this way, and this isn't every case. It depends on your timing of your event, what our supply and demand is. But if you can convince me that you're going to have a fundraiser at a you're going to have a party at a fundraiser and not a fundraiser at your party. In other words, if the fundraising is the most important thing for you and it makes sense to me, then I actually will tell people, look, here's my fee. Here's what I think we're worth. But I'll guarantee it. If I interview you long enough, it's funny, people think they call me to interview me about whether or not I'd be the right auctioneer or our team would be the right auctioneer. I actually end up interviewing the client more to find out more about their events, their hopes, their dreams, their goals. And if you can convince me that we're going to be the right fit, that we're all going to go out there and fundraise like crazy, then I will put a guarantee from our company on it that says you can pay us whatever you want. That is what I do for groups that have little to no budget, that we all agree we're going to be the right fit. I'll put that forth, because after talking to them for a good 30 to 40 minutes over the phone, which they normally don't want to do because they just want to know how much do you charge and are you available, I need to know a lot more about your event if you can convince me that we're going to fundraise like crazy and have an incredibly wonderful time where your guests feel great about giving more than they think they should. I put a guarantee on our fee. It's that simple.
So
there is no budget concern. I will prove to you, and any fundraising auctioneer somehow, some way should be able to prove to you through references, through testimonials, that they're going to be worth more than their fee.
All right. What are some of the quickest ways that you have earned your fee? Some of the little tricks and techniques you've used to quickly earn back your fee? Because I know an expert like yourself, some of the top people in the fundraising auction space, they pay for themselves often in the first half hour, sometimes the first 15 minutes of the event. What are some of the things that Jim Nye does?
Jim Nye will not allow myself or one of our other auctioneers to step onto the stage of an event unless we've had a long discussion about the audiovisual, the AV, the sound system at your event. I have given up trusting that the AV team is going to be awesome. I need to talk to them ahead of time. We need to find out how many benefit auctions your AV team has done. We need to make sure there's going to be a person at the event, a tech on site, or else you stand the chance of losing thousands and thousands of dollars. I have not learned this again since our next to last event, where the child came up to the stage for the paddle raise to talk about the testimonial for the paddle raise. We were about to ask the crowd to give thousands and thousands of dollars to help this children's hospital, and we did not have a tech on site for the AV team. They thought that the ceiling speakers in the room would be awesome, and it was for the most part, but when that child got up there to speak, no one could hear him. He was nervous. He was speaking fast. So I literally had to stand with the microphone and put it up to his mouth. I know this sounds simple, but in the moment, it you have to be very careful with how you do that. It's a very delicate subject matter. They could have easily lost $10,000, and this was not a very large event. They could have lost 10 grand easy with the AV situation. There are so many examples of that. Your fundraising auctioneer, who you're afraid to pay because you don't have a budget, is going to ask you about your AV. They're going to ask you probably about 20 other very important questions before you even get to the event. Do you have a live auction flyer? Are you going to have a live auction PowerPoint? Would you like examples of why those are visually inspiring? There's so many things we're going to talk about prior to the event. We will help you earn your revenue before we step on stage. Most of the success most fundraising auctioneers have, believe it or not, even with the great show they're putting on, happen during the conference calls, happen during the meetings. Your volunteer, who you're going to pay zero for, they're not going to attend six meetings. They're not going to be on a phone call with you for 6 hours or six 1-hour conference calls, which we normally are. Please, please hire a professional fundraising auctioneer that will invest themselves in your business, invest the business, which is your business. You have a business, not a gala. Your gala makes money for a charity or school. It is a business in our eyes, and we will help you run that once-a-year business like nobody else on the planet.
Well, that certainly is one of the big differences between a regular auctioneer and the fundraising auctioneer, is that you can expect that your fundraising, your professional fundraising auctioneer, is going to act as a full-on consultant for your organization and for your event. I'm going to pepper you with just a couple of questions here. Silent auction, when's the best time, in your opinion, to close the silent auction?
Well, it's all changed recently with mobile bidding coming into play. So if we're talking about paper bidding, then we definitely want to close it before we get to the live auction. For most of the groups, at least here in Southern California, it's a 90-minute window. You start at 6, silent auction closes at 7:30, and we move into dinner. 90-minute window. If we are doing mobile bidding, we have the opportunity to keep the silent auction open as we go into the dinner hour. Again, some events are different with buffets and things, or their daytime events, but if we're talking a normal dinner time event, we can now keep the silent auction open during dinner, and somewhere during that dinner period, we can allow people to jump back into their phones and bid one last time and steal someone else's hopes and dreams.
Next question.
But still close it before the live.
Next question, what's the best time to start your live auction?
As early as humanly possible. Every minute is a revenue minute. Now, again, I hate to keep saying this, but it is event dependent, and your professional fundraising auctioneer is going to have a long discussion with you about your event, your timeline, what happened last year, how can it be better. But in general, I would just say the earlier the better. Clearly, you're going to have your silent auction, but if we can start that live auction, again, normal time period at 7 or 7:30, you're going to raise a ton more than if you waited till 10 o'clock. And we all love the celebrities. We all love the music. We all love the politicians who want to speak. Every minute is a revenue minute. It is so much easier for us to raise money for you when people are in the room emotionally or physically. Start your fundraising earlier than you think you should.
Let's talk about the fund in need or special appeal or cash appeal, whatever you want to call it. When do we insert that into the program? And should it be a part of every fundraising auction event?
The last question you asked is the easiest. Yes, it should be. And it's not so much because of the revenue. Of course, it's a great way to raise revenue. And for many events, it's going to raise more than the live auction will. But it's more important for your guests, because so many people are not fans of silent auction, so many people are not fans of live auction. You need to give everyone the opportunity to feel great about giving. And with your paddle raise, you can go down as low as you'd like, $100, $50. Some events, we have sorority girls who've put on big events for American Heart Association. They want to go down to $20 just so they can feel like they played a role. So give everyone a chance during a paddle raise or fund a need. It can even be a small one in the first year. Do baby steps if you're afraid of what will happen. But everyone needs to be able to give and feel great about it, go back to their car and feel like they played a role in your evening. That can be done with a paddle raise.
And when should the paddle raise take place?
The simple answer is immediately before or immediately after the live auction. It does depend on the client. It depends on the situation. I would say for most school auctions, it's going to be immediately after the live auction or somewhere in the middle. For some of our charity events, when the people have been coming for years and years and they have a really good idea of why they're coming, they don't need to be educated as much. The paddle raise can happen before the live auction, but it should definitely happen. The paddle raise should definitely happen after the most emotional moment of the night, which is usually a testimonial or a video.
All right, Jim, you touch on the emotion. Let's just drill down a little bit on that. And what do you feel are the requirements or what's necessary to have a successful paddle raise? How do you set it up?
Again, that's a two-hour conversation. So let me just get to the basics. We need someone to communicate to the audience why giving in the next few minutes is going to change someone's life. Now, yes, some events are very emotional. Some are not so emotional. So sometimes we are trying to deal with pediatric cancer. Other times we're simply trying to raise money for smart boards in the second grade classroom. So I understand not everything can be very emotional. But even if it's that second grade classroom where we need a new ball wall in the PE field, get a teacher up there. Allow them to speak from the heart and say, I mean, in fact, my child's school, we had to redo the field. Kids were getting broken ankles and hurting themselves out in the field. So we had the PE teacher come up and explain how important. The kids weren't wanting to play. They weren't wanting to exercise. We had the PE teacher come up and they spoke about it. Have somebody come up and speak as to why giving is going to play an important role in someone's life. And here's the more important part. Talk with them ahead of time. Know exactly what they're going to say. Do not let anyone approach the microphone during your event, let alone during the paddle raise, where you haven't gone over with them exactly what they're going to say. Can they go off a little bit? Sure. Do they have to have the exact words? No. But you need to see their script. It should be probably 2 pages at most. You need to know what someone's going to say. You need to tell them how long you want them to speak. It's very, very important. Your paddle raise is the most important moment of the night for so many people. And again, not only from revenue, but from an emotional standpoint, know what your paddle raise speaker is going to say. This is another thing your professional fundraising auctioneer is not going to let go just crazy. They're going to find out ahead of time exactly what they're going to say, and we're going to check with them again that night of.
All right, Jim, to have a successful paddle raise, obviously, we need paddles. And what's the procedure or process that you recommend for getting paddles into people's hands? Because I know some of these organizations, I know some of the clients I work with, there's pushback. They don't want to pre-register their guests. They don't want to use bid card numbers. They don't want to use paddles. If they are using bid cards, lots of times, as you say, they're written in fine little Sharpie. I've seen bid numbers written on sheets of paper that are 2 inches by 3 inches. And if you're an eagle, you couldn't read those from across the room. So how do you coach your clients and convince them that bid card numbers or number paddles are absolutely critical and essential to the success and to the outcome of your event?
I'll be honest with them. I will tell them that the clients we have that have set revenue records in their paddle raise and their fund to need have had bid cards in people's hands. Every single time. It's amazing how many times we've gone without bid cards. We've done the pledge cards on the table, which die a horrible death. And there's leakage. You never know where those pledge cards end up. Unfortunately, those numbers that we've studied have shown we don't increase revenue during the paddle raise with that. But when we stick bid cards in people's hands, when Steve at table 32 proudly raises his bid card, even at the $250 level, it inspires other near and around him who can see Steve giving. They get caught up. They want to play a role in it as well. So I'll ask clients, if we have enough time, come to one of our other events that have actually assigned bid cards. Maybe you can sit behind the check-in area and you can watch how it occurs. Most of our clients now are taking the process where they will actually pre-assign the bid numbers to the guests, but the bid cards themselves will be put on the table. So they're inside the ballroom. The guests don't have to carry them around. They have their bid number through one of various other ways, either on the mobile bidding device you have, or we've given them a tent card. We've given them some other way of knowing what their bid number is. They need it during the silent auction. But when they sit down in the ballroom, that's the first time they will see their bid number. Their bid card or bid paddle. I don't care if it's a card. I don't care if it's a paddle. I just need it big enough so that it inspires other people to give visually. And your auctioneer, as Danny just mentioned, needs to be able to read that quickly, because we've already heard that every minute's a revenue minute. And if we're fortunate enough to have a professional fundraising auctioneer generating lots of bid cards going up in the air at the $1,000 level and the $500 level, we need to be able to read those bid numbers off quickly. And simply, bidder 165, thank you. Bidder 192, thank you. If you feel how fast that goes, as opposed to bidder number, can you just hold it up? Can somebody get out there? And you imagine that happening 100 times during a paddle raise, you've lost your audience. So we now see more clients putting those bid numbers, bid cards on the table. When you go into your dinner, you see a stack of bid cards at your table. They've got your name on it, bidder 152, Stan Smith. Somebody hands it to Stan. Stan's got his bid card. He didn't have to carry it around during the entire silent auction. It works. We've set revenue records that way, and no other way has ever beaten it.
All right, Jim, this is going to sound like a really elementary question, but we have obviously a lot of listeners on this podcast who are just getting started in this area and just maybe planning their first event. So simple question, but where do you get bid cards made up, or where do you get the bid paddles made? Where do they come from? Do they come from your auctioneer, or do you have to order those from a printer? Where do they come from?
Oh, either one of those options are fine. I know we certainly have various options for our clients. Send out a whole email, actually, about bid cards, bid paddles. It talks all about it. I give links to where you can go to get them, and I also have PDFs you can print out yourself. Amazingly enough, my my 12-year-old son can probably print out beautiful bid cards better than I can because he's so tech savvy. So I don't think it's too much of a stretch to print them out for yourself. However, there is a wonderful thing called Google, if you've all heard of it, and you can find bid cards and bid paddles online. Benefit auction bid cards. There's some incredible shapes and sizes available. If you're having a Kentucky Derby theme, guess what? They've got that. We had an event related to Native American Indians, and they had tomahawks for their, they chose them, by the way, they had tomahawks for their bid cards. So almost anything is available to you, but again, something very simple, an 8.5 by 11 with huge black numbers on them is all you need. You can get them online, you can get them from your auctioneer, you can get it from a printer.
All right. Just taking a little pause here for a second.
Jim, this has been outstanding so far. Trying to think about any questions I might have. So thank you, Jim. Go ahead. I was going to ask real quick if you could speak briefly about selling consignment travel packages in the live auctions. I know there's definitely some tricks to doing it effectively up on stage. What are your experiences?
Well, speaking frankly, my experiences with consignment packages, it's taken a long time for me to learn the most effective ways to sell them and then to train my team also how to sell them on stage. Now that we've learned, and this is not unlike any other portion of our benefit auction experience, by the way, you know, it takes several years to learn how to do anything, right, in life, I suppose. So now that we've done it many times, we have certain ways we go about selling consignment package that makes sure the momentum in the room stays afloat, even if we're not able to sell it for the reserve, which is the same thing that can happen with your jewelry, with your artwork that we are forced to sell during benefit auctions sometimes, or anything else with a reserve. So a professional fundraising auctioneer who's had experience with consignment trips can help your crowd feel better about bidding like crazy on the consignment trips. We can definitely help you sell multiple consignment trips during your benefit auction, which I never was good at before when I was a volunteer. Never knew how to do it. So again, this is something I could literally do 2 hours of conversation about how best to sell these, but the long story short is, if you hire a professional fundraising auctioneer that has experience with consignment trips, we now have the ability to sell 2 or 3, sometimes even 4 trips. In fact, we had a small event for a lawyers association recently. They only had consignment trips. There wasn't a very big live auction. And I think it was a trip to Bali where we were able to sell it for $1,400 over the cost of nonprofit. We sold it 4 times in the room. I only sold it 3 times, and somebody else raised their hand as I went to the next item and said, I want one too. They ended up raising well over $5,000 at a small event for just one particular consignment item. And I would say they were so happy with it because the people were excited. And if we had just sold a very small item that wasn't worth very much, 2 tickets to a Dodgers game or something like that, it wouldn't have generated the same excitement. It wouldn't have been as memorable, and people wouldn't have as much fun. But people were having a great time as people were bidding on these consignment trips because they were so unique. So I'd highly recommend them, first of all, but I'd also highly recommend you find somebody who is very skilled at selling them to help you raise a lot of revenue.
Well, we both know that we hear some crazy objections from our clients as to why they don't want to try consignment packages, consignment travel experiences, and one of the objections I'll hear from a client is, well, you know, after we pay the reserve price on it, we've only made $1,200 or $1,400 or $1,500. And I say to them, what's the difference between making $1,200, $1,400 or $1,500 profit on a consignment package or $1,200, $1,400, $1,500 profit on an item in your silent auction? I mean, the money is the money.
It truly is. I'm amazed at how many times after we've done consignment in an auction, and then the next year comes around, let's say we had a great trip to one of the guided sommelier tours to Napa. One of those trips alone where people just wake up in the crowd, all of a sudden, item number 8, we've got this incredible guided trip through Napa, sommelier is going to take you all around, incredible hotel. People, first of all, just kind of sit up in the audience to start paying attention again, by the way. But the next year comes around, and all of a sudden we have more possible trips coming in, donated possible trips that we hadn't heard about the previous year. I see this over and over, and it's taken me a while, but I now realize just by having that incredible consignment trip or two in your live auction, it wakens people up to the fact that this charity or this school, this event is a higher quality, higher caliber than I thought when it came to donations. And people are all of a sudden coming at us and saying, I've got this, you know, my aunt Marba has a castle in Aruba. We'd like to put it in the auction this year. I was shocked by how many great trips you had last year in the auction. So, yeah, let's do it this year. They were holding it. They didn't think your event was worthy of it. So not only can consignment trips raise you a lot of money, but they can also open your guests' and donors' eyes to giving you better trips the next year.
Well, as Ian always says here at Winspire, we know that most people, they've done the studies, have an annual travel budget, and that's where this stuff works real great.
Yeah, just, you know, real quick, and I love what you said there, Jim, just about, you know, these folks who kind of start to realize how much money they have to spend on travel when it comes to these things, and, you know, opening their eyes to what the possibility is for the live auction, and just really how successful experiential or travel items are, regardless of whether it's consignment, you know, just travel in general.
Yeah, and I love the fact that people are so excited about travel, and it's usually the biggest high five, it's usually the biggest table cheering of the night when we finally sell the consignment trip, the you know, great trip to Chicago with shopping and Wrigley Field experience. That the whole crowd just becomes more alive and people are bidding on this great trip. And when the person finally wins it, that's when the huge cheer goes up from table number 7 because Marcy just won this incredible trip to Chicago. It's memorable. It's fun. We see so many of the same items coming back and back every single year to our events. It's just not as exciting for the crowd. So give them something that they can get excited about. That's what these incredible consignment trips are for. We can't get them other places. I say go for it. We have so much success with them, and the crowd loves them.
Yeah, one thing we like to remind people about, too, is the fact that, you know, a lot of your audience, most of your audience, has a travel budget that's separate from the philanthropic budget that you're typically targeting with your fund in need or, you know, a lot of these items. And it's money that they're going to spend one way or another on travel each year. They're either going to spend it on Expedia and through their travel agent or at your event. So if you can, you know, get some of that, you know, that $10,000 or $5,000 most of these donors are going to be spending anyway on travel to spend towards your cause, then it's a win-win for everybody.
Yep, and it goes back to the point we talked about earlier, is there's always money left in the room. There's always generosity left. The consignment trips, I find, is where we find the people that are giving the huge gifts during the paddle raise. We used to be hear from the committee members, well, if they give for the big consignment items, they won't give during the paddle raise. Guess who's buying the consignment trips? Guess who's buying any of your big trips? It's the same people that are giving the high money in the paddle raise. They buy the live auction items because they can. They give $50,000 or $5,000, depending on your event. They might be the highest bid during the paddle raise. But they still can buy, and they still happily give generously for the big trips in your live auction. So I say do it all. Why not do it all? Give them great trips. Give them great opportunities during the paddle raise. Give everyone a chance to feel great about giving more than they think they should. If you don't have great trips in your live auction, you are definitely missing something.
Well, Jim Nye, I tell you, you've given us a lot of gold, a lot of nuggets today. In just a moment, we're going to ask you maybe to share what you might consider to be three takeaways for today's podcast listeners. Certainly, you are a wealth of information, and your experience shines. If people do want to get a hold of you, how would they go about doing that?
Oh, they go to our horrible website. I am so proud to say we have set a record for the number of events we have done personally in 2016, and the one thing it's definitely kept me from doing is doing a better website. So for now, it's just my thrilling LosAngelesAuctioneer.com. LosAngelesAuctioneer.com, that'll get you to me, and you can also just email me any questions or concerns. I'm happy to help you whether you're a client of ours or not. We want you to have a great benefit auction no matter where you are in the country. You can email me at jim@jimnye.com. It is like Bill Nye the Science Guy, for those of you that know him, and actually my dad's name is Bill Nye, so I get to tell everybody I'm related to Bill Nye, even though it's not the Bill Nye you're thinking of. Jim at jimnye.com.
All right, Jim, well, go ahead and share those three takeaways with us.
Well, we'll wrap it up in a little bow for you. We kind of talked about it already, and you've heard it before. You'll hear it again from us. Number one, hire a professional fundraising auctioneer for your event. They will be worth more than their fee. Now, you've got to do your interview, and you got to vet. You got to make sure you hear recent references. But at the end of the day, if you hire the right person for your event, they will raise you so much more than a volunteer will. It's just astounding to me. I've heard the stories. I cringe when everyone tells me they're going to use a volunteer auctioneer because I know what's going to happen, not only from the revenue, but from a guest experience. Number two, hire a professional AV team. I know nothing about sound systems, AV. I couldn't help you to save my life. I want you to hire a professional AV team for your benefit auction. They will pay for themselves so many times over. I don't want to give you the horror stories. I can. Please hire a professional AV team. And number three, the revenue enhancers that a professional fundraising auctioneer can share with you, not only will they pay for their fee, but they will give your guests something to remember. The revenue enhancers that we have, Danny's got the wild card, I've got the 100-yard dash, we have the last card up we've talked about, all these unique things which you won't hear about from a volunteer auctioneer or just a car auctioneer in general that might be helping you with your event. A professional fundraising auctioneer can show you fun, new, exciting ways for your guests to give. And I'm talking even a dollar. Believe it or not, there's one out there. We can have people give a dollar. We can raise $5,000 at your event in about 3 minutes, and they talk about it all night long. Do something unique and different at your event so your guests have fun, they remain engaged, and with those revenue enhancers, they will want to come back next year because your event was fun.
Well, as we've said many times in the past, the three E's of a successful fundraising event are entertain your crowd, engage them, and extract the money. Certainly, Jim Nye, you're a master at the game. And just congratulations for everything that you are doing out there, because I know that you share so much of your knowledge, and you do way more than you get paid for. So kudos to you, my friend, and thanks for joining us here today on Events with Benefits.
We appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me.
This has been another episode of Events with Benefits. Thank you so much for joining us. If you like what you heard on today's episode, please, please rate us wherever you find your podcasts. And be sure to share this with anyone you think it can help. You can find more information about our guest and resources in the show notes at www.eventswithbenefits.com. And please stay tuned for more episodes coming up very, very soon. Thanks all, and we look forward to seeing you next time.